It is April 20th, 2022, and this is the John Lothian News Daily Update. I am John Lothian. This podcast includes commentary from our hits and takes section of JLN, stories from the first read section of today's newsletter, a listing of the top three stories from yesterday's newsletter, and of the first three stories in the lead section of today's JLN. This podcast is a production of John Lothian News, home of MarketsWiki and MarketsWiki Education. We encourage you to learn about the history of trading from our Open Outcry Traders History Project or the Path to Electronic Trading video series at johnlothiannews.com. Here are the hits and takes comments from today's JLN. When I was a college reporter with the Purdue Exponent, my one and only assignment that took me on the road was to South Bend, Indiana, home of Touchdown Jesus and the Fighting Irish football team. But I went to the campus of Notre Dame University to hear famed New York Times Pulitzer Prize-winning political columnist James Scotty Reston give a speech about sports. I forget who we were honoring at the time. The gist of the speech was that all too often we put the words of war into our description of competition between athletic teams or even political rivals. This was a bad practice, he said, and journalists should avoid such easy traps to make stories seem more dramatic and conflict more important than it really is. He spoke these words in the early 1980s when the U.S. and the USSR had more nuclear missiles than they knew what to do with. There are plenty of journalists guilty of this sloppy war language today. I am sure I've fallen guilty to making something a battle that is simply a game or match myself. Now that we have on-demand gambling, this type of language seems to be much more prevalent in our lives, whether on television commercials, during baseball games, or on billboards anywhere. Language matters, Scotty Reston taught me. It was a lesson worthy of traveling to the campus of Purdue's sports rival. SEC Chairman Gary Gensler shared a video on the SEC's YouTube channel about his first year in office, continuing his excellent communication with staff and the public during his tenure. This is just my opinion as an arbiter of his communications. What is the former Tudor Investment Corp co-founder Peter Borish up to now? There's a link in today's newsletter with a tweet that helps tell the story. The CFTC and the SEC won a jury verdict in a 2020 commodity pool fraud and securities fraud case, but did not win on all counts in the case against Edward C. Walchek. The case revolved around a fraud about risk management that was supposed to be in place and executed. On the SEC side of the case, the jury serving in the United States District Court for the Western District of Wisconsin found Walchek liable for negligence-based securities fraud for misrepresenting to investors how he would manage risk in the Catalyst Hedge Futures Strategy Fund. The SEC had won a partial summary judgment in the case back on February 4th. SEC Division of Enforcement Director Gerber S. Gruhl had this to say about the verdict. Fund portfolio managers like Walchek have a duty to tell the truth about the investments they manage, and when they fall short, as the jury found in the case, we'll hold them accountable because that's what investor protection requires. In this case, we were joined in that effort by the CFTC, and we thank them for their assistance and cooperation. It is nice to see the SEC and CFTC work together and win a case together. The Los Angeles Times has an in-depth story about the history of 420, which is today's date, and how it became synonymous with cannabis smoking. Thank you to Maggie Sklar of Murphy & McGonigal for giving to the JLN Markets Wiki Education GoFundMe campaign. Maggie recently left the Chicago Federal Reserve's Financial Markets Group and was on Chris Giancarlo's team at the CFTC when he was chairman, but she joined the growing Chicago office of the law firm of Murphy & McGonigal. Thank you to Maggie and all who have supported our efforts to preserve industry history and educate the next generation of industry participants and professionals. Interestingly, it was 3 years ago yesterday we shot the first official video, sorry Doug, for the Open Outcry Traders History Project with the CME Chairman Emeritus Leo Melamed. Marex announced record results for the year 2021 today, including net revenue up 31% to $543 million, with strong performance across all segments and adjusted operating BPT up 29% to $79.6 million, driven primarily by strong organic growth. The press release is below under Banks, Brokers, and Managed Funds, Sarah Rudolph reported. Here are more stories from the first read section of today's JLN. From the New York Times, the title of the story is Why We Admire Zelensky. Why do we admire Volodymyr Zelensky? The question almost answers itself. We admire him because in the face of unequal odds, Ukraine's president stands his ground, because he proves the truth of the adage that one man with courage makes a majority, because he shows that honor and love of country are virtues we forsake at our peril, because he grasps the power of personal example and physical presence, because he knows how words can inspire deeds, give shape and purpose to them, so that the deeds may in turn vindicate the meaning of words. My comment, we all like an underdog. We all like courage. We all like someone who tells the truth to power. We all like a man who was made for the right time and place. Here's a story from Crane Chicago Business and Steve Daniels. The title, Citizen Ken, What Kind of Politician Would Illinois' Richest Man Make? With Griffin eyeing a run for office, at some point, Crane sizes up the mogul as a candidate. Here's the story. Ken Griffin, Illinois' richest man and founder of two highly successful Chicago-based businesses, is plowing tens of millions into the state gubernatorial race this year, as well as the national midterm elections. Would the billionaire ever opt to use his formidable checkbook on his own campaign rather than the bids of others? If so, what kind of politician would he make? My comment, I don't believe Mr. Griffin would ever give up his privacy for the public life of a politician, and I don't blame him for that at all. And why do something yourself when you can support others who can do it and preserve your privacy? Here's a story from the New York Times. The title, with inflation, workers are facing return to office sticker shock. The cost of a daily routine, travel, coffee, food, is pricier than it was when offices shut down 2 years ago. As the security software company NoB4 weighed whether to require a return to office, executives knew to anticipate a certain set of concerns from employees. Less flexibility, more time in transit. Then in recent months came a new set of worries about RTO, the rising cost of gas and food, especially near the firm's headquarters in Clearwater, Florida, one of the areas of the United States hardest hit by inflation. My comment, donuts are how much? Here are the top three stories from Tuesday's JLN. Our top story Tuesday was the SEC press release, which was the lead story. SEC uncovers $194 million penny stock scheme that spanned three continents. That's a lot of pumping and dumping. Second was Master of ICE Futures YouTube video with Patrick Young talking to ICE Futures U.S. President Trebu Bland and ICE Futures Abu Dhabi President Jamal Al-Haj. Third was Grandmaster Garry Kasparov predicts palace coup may oust Putin over Ukraine from Huffington Post via Yahoo News. Here are the top three stories from the lead section of today's JLN. The first story is from Bloomberg. The headline is, wannabe traders chase dream of student loan payoffs via market wins, trying to trim $1.7 trillion owed through stocks crypto. Advisors warn of risks as S&P 500 Bitcoin have sunk this year. Viral success stories of people who used the post-pandemic stock market to trade their way out of mountains of student loan debt kept inspiring do-it-yourself investors. But while equities have produced a time-honored route to wealth creation for generations of Americans, aspects of these get-out-of-debt-quick efforts sit uneasily with Wall Street's conservative investing old guard. With the fight against inflation whipping up volatility across asset classes and exotica like cryptocurrency still finding its way into retail portfolios, they warn the risk of bad outcomes is as high as it's ever been. The next story is a press release from CBOE. CBOE Europe derivatives to launch new equity index products. CBOE Global Markets Inc., a leading provider of global market infrastructure and tradable products, today announced the planned launch of new equity index futures and options products for trading on CBOE Europe derivatives, CEDX, its Amsterdam-based equity derivatives exchange. Futures and options will be launched on four additional CBOE Europe single country index benchmarks, the CBOE Italy 40, CBOE Norway 25, CBOE Spain 35, and CBOE Sweden 30. These eight new products are planned to be made available for trading on CEDX starting Wednesday, the 27th of April, with clearing provided by EuroCCP, CBOE's pan-European clearinghouse. And the next story is from Bloomberg. UK sets gender ethnicity targets for executive boards. FCA says companies must give explanations if they don't comply. Firms can decide if definition of women includes trans women. The Financial Conduct Authority has set UK-listed companies three diversity targets, including a goal for at least 40% of women on their boards in the latest move to bolster diversity in the upper ranks of British businesses. Companies should also have at least one woman in the role of chief executive officer, chief financial officer, or senior independent director, the FCA said in a statement Wednesday. The regulator also said that at least one member of the board should be from an ethnic minority background, excluding white ethnic groups. Here's a story from the Financial Times. The headline, financial regulator moves to boost number of women in UK boardrooms. FCA says women should hold at least 40% of seats on boards of listed companies in fresh diversity push. This is the same story, but from the FT. UK-listed companies have been told by the country's financial watchdog that women should hold at least 40% of board seats in a fresh push to ensure diversity in senior executive positions. The Financial Conduct Authority on Tuesday published long-awaited rules to boost representation across companies listed in London. These compromise targets to increase the number of women in boardroom roles, including in senior positions such as chief executive or finance director, and ensuring boards have at least one ethnic minority member. Thank you for listening to the John Lothian News Daily Update. Please consider telling a friend about our podcast, and if you haven't yet, please write a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps new listeners find us. Also, if you aren't already a subscriber to the daily John Lothian newsletter email, you can get a free 90-day trial at johnlothiannews.com/trial. Have a great day, stay safe, and treat people the same way you want to be treated, with respect, equality, and justice. This has been John Lothian. Goodbye.